Hey guys, it's Albert. This week we're going to attack the Khalil Mack situation right away. Then I'll bring in Jenny and Connor for the news. And as always, we wrap things up with a six-pack of your Twitter questions. Let's go. All right, welcome back in. Football season is here. It's the MMQB podcast with Albert Breer. Week one, when you're listening to this, will begin tomorrow, actually. The Falcons visiting the Super Bowl champion Eagles. And we're going to start here with the big news from over the weekend, and that is one of the best players, not one of the best pass rushers, not one of the best defensive players, one of the best players in the entire NFL getting traded. And look, part of this was the hit that the Raiders took and the hit that John Gruden took. And I'm here to tell you that I don't think this is as simple as people are making it out to be. And I wouldn't have traded Khalil Mack, but I think there is some pretty easy to explain logic as to why he did it. And I'm going to explain that here, and then I'm going to have Jenny and Connor come in and tell me I'm a moron. The idea here, and when I look at it, I think it's always about, you know, a team being honest with themselves. And a new coach coming in, and you know, if it's new general manager coming in, they got to come in and they got to assess what they've got. And I talked to John Gruden a month ago, and unsolicited, he told me that he felt like the roster was gutted when he got there. And it was one of the reasons why they brought in all those older veterans. And he didn't feel like there was depth anywhere on the roster. He felt like there were significant holes left and right. And he sounded like a guy who was saying, we're a year or 2 years away from getting where we need to be. And so if you're going to do a market-changing deal, a market correction deal for a player who's not a quarterback, then I think you have to take that into account. Because let's just say, devil's advocate here, let's just say the vision for John Gruden, what he wants to do is building towards, say, the 2020 season, if he really feels the roster is in that sort of shape. Well, then I think the question becomes, do we want to upset our salary structure? Do we want to change the market for non-quarterbacks? Do we want to tie ourselves down from a guaranteed money standpoint? And do we want to set certain precedents in bringing back this player that now we're going to have to answer to with other players? When the guy who's a great player now, I don't think anybody's arguing that. But by the time we're good enough to compete, by the time we feel like we're going to be good enough to contend, by the time the roster is where I think it's going to be, the guy's going to be 30 years old. And so I think a piece of this is John Gruden's own view of where the roster is and where the roster will be in 2 years and what Khalil Mack will be in 2 years. And will he be worth $23.5 million in 2020? Connor, Jenny, I think it's a fair question to ask. And he got killed for it. And I think a lot of us look back and look, I don't think they're as far off as he's saying. I would have kept Khalil Mack. But if he's being honest with himself and he's telling himself we're still 2 years away, then I think he part of doing a deal like that for a Khalil Mack is looking at it and saying, by the time we're ready to contend, what's going to be left of Khalil Mack? And he may still be a great player in 2 years. I think it's absolutely on the table. But I think history tells us with these guys, with great players, once they get a few years into the second contract, what happens? A lot of times you see them cut. A lot of times you see them traded. A lot of times you see teams that are unhappy with the deals that they did. And so, I mean, this a deal like this doesn't just change the dynamic of, you know, doesn't just change what you're doing in the current year of the salary cap. Changes the way that you get, like it changes what other players are going to ask for. It changes the, it just, like to me, it's like this is such a an impactful deal to do that if you're going to do it, I think you probably want to have a pretty good idea that that guy is going to be still a high-level player when you're ready to contend.
Well, $23 million in 2 years looks a lot different, right? I mean, yeah. With the way the salary cap is shooting up, with the way the prices for premium positions, of which, you know, pass rusher is one of the two most important positions in the NFL. So I think that number, it doesn't look quite as extreme the way that the cap is shooting up. And then you're, you know, you hit on the draft in the same year, you hit on a quarterback and a pass rusher. That's like a gold mine. And then you essentially, like, you say, ah, whatever, it doesn't matter that we hit on it. Mm-hmm. You let go of the asset that you had. You know, I don't know. I think if you think there's holes on your roster, that's fine. But ideally, when you are restocking a roster, you're supplementing around key pieces. And now you've just created another hole at one of the most important positions on the field.
And I understand that. And I think that there's always like this pay the man mentality when a guy like that is up for a contract. Again, like, I think the Raiders are closer than Gruden might. Like, I think
they're 12-4.
They were 12-4 2 years ago.
Reggie McKenzie won executive of the year in 2017.
And look, I think that's a part of this too. Like, there is a Reggie versus Gruden.
Someone needs to get that guy out of there.
There is a Reggie versus Gruden element to all of this too.
That was very bizarre. Some of the comments that their comments a day apart were totally different. McKenzie and Gruden.
Yeah. Now my understanding is that teams that were calling, like, they would call Gruden and Gruden would pass them off to McKenzie. Like, as far as talking about the details of a trade. And this thing turned too. Like, Coyle was not available for trade until Donald's deal got done. And then Donald's deal gets done. And now all of a sudden, well, what Coyle was asking for was no longer unrealistic. You know, like, because, I mean, there's this vacuum where we haven't seen defensive players paid that way before, obviously. And it's been 3 years since the market's moved at all, because Von Miller basically did the same deals in Ndamukong Suh. So the market hasn't really moved at all in 3 years. And so it was time for a market correction. But you're sort of dealing in like an abstract there, you know, like how much do you really go above where the market already is? And I think the Raiders kind of got that jolt on Friday, like, oh my God, like, what he was asking for isn't out of line.
It's not out of line, but like Jenny said, I mean, the salary cap is going to keep going up. And if I'm a Raiders fan, and I heard from a lot of Raiders fans this weekend who are absolutely terrified. I mean, John Gruden has assumed control of your front office, and show me his track record of building a team. Show me his track record of strong first-round draft picks. I mean, and if the Bears are any good this season, this pick could be in the teens to the early 20s if this team is any good.
And right.
So, and Mac makes them better, so Mac that makes the better. Draft pick worse.
And it, just an interesting way I thought to think about it that I heard this morning was to go back, whoever your favorite team is, and go back to the last 10 years of their draft picks and take your first-round pick 2 years in a row and say, would I trade those two picks for Khalil Mack? And I bet 80 to 90% of the time, you would give away those two guys for Khalil Mack. I think this is going to go down as one of the worst trades in NFL history.
But would you trade those guys for what Khalil Mack's going to be in 2 years?
I think, yes.
I mean, I just I look at the history of it, and I just, again, like, DeMarcus Ware, right, was a very serviceable player at the end with the Broncos. But he wasn't DeMarcus Ware from 2007. And that was what DeMarcus Ware became later in his career. And so are you comfortable with Khalil Mack becoming that maybe in a couple of years, where he's still a very good player, but not what he was before, and he's making what an elite player makes? And maybe the dynamic of it looks different. Maybe that, and who knows what's going to happen with the new CBA, all that different stuff. But I just think that you have to, if you're listening to Gruden, you have to project this forward 2 years, right? Like, you almost have to, because he clearly doesn't think a lot of the roster.
I think, Reggie, if you're out there, if you want another job, you can come on the podcast. We'll treat you good here. We won't do that to you.
And I think he's and we've seen this so many times too. I mean, part of this is, look, if you're Mark Davis, you got to put those two in a room and say, we're going to figure this out. Or, like, Reggie, if you want to go, because I think a big part of it is, and look, we saw this in Houston. We saw this with the Rams a couple of years ago. We saw this with Indianapolis. We saw this with San Francisco between Balke and Harbaugh. There's nothing worse than when one doesn't trust the other. And I think that that's at work here too. So if one doesn't trust the other, that means, you know what that means, is the guy who has the power is going to start bigfooting the other one. And clearly the guy who has the power here is Gruden. And so it's just, there's I don't know if there's anything that's taken down more teams than that over the last 5-6 years. If you look at people who've been fired, teams that have kind of gone from pretty good to really awful really quick, there's almost always a problem between coaching and scouting.
Yeah, if I'm Mark Davis, I mean, how do you not anticipate that coming? You know, and if you're the rest of that scouting staff that did all the legwork to put that draft together, I mean, that Derek Carr, Khalil Mack draft goes down as one of the best 1-2s probably in the last 20 years, maybe. And, you know, that was a proud moment. You finished 12-4. You're one broken leg away from maybe going deep into the playoffs that year with Derek Carr. I mean, you know, how does he go back to the scouting staff now and say that I'm not going to do that again and that I'm not just going to keep layering this roster with fragile 33-year-olds instead of building the guys that we all work towards? And, you know, I think this is a Gruden problem, and he's going to have to really tone it down a little bit.
I think one thing we can all agree on, they got to nail their draft picks now. That's it. And when you're going to trade a player like this, and this is also for the Bears, this is a signal to the locker room, like, we think you're ready to win now. Like, that's what this does, is it tells the locker room, like, we don't do this unless we think that we are in a position to win right now today. And so I think that it's got a positive effect in the Bears that way. The Raiders have to nail those draft picks. Like, the Raiders, like, because that's what got Gruden in Tampa, was all of a sudden there was no good young talent in the roster. They were overextending to bring veterans in. The quarterback situation was up. There's a revolving door at quarterback, and he's gonna need to bring young talent in the building. Okay, so we'll get to the news now, and that brings us to our first news item of the week, which ties right into the Khalil Mack thing, and that's Aaron Donald. Friday, he agreed to a 6-year, $135 million deal, establishing a new financial standard for non-quarterbacks. He was only the highest paid defensive player for about, 24 hours, 48 hours, whatever it was. But this is a huge breakthrough. I mean, and this is, like, I think this is the product of standing your ground and saying, like, I think that my value is somewhere where teams haven't gone before, and I'm willing to stick up for myself and put myself in a position to do it. I also think, credit the Rams for not letting things spin out of control the way they have to some degree with Le'Veon Bell in Pittsburgh, the way that they did to a major degree with Khalil Mack in Oakland, where, whether, you know, McVay, Demoff, Snead, like, all those guys were able to keep it in a place this year where, even though there were tense moments behind the scenes, that never spilled out, and now he can show back up, and there's no awkwardness to it at all. It was just, hey, this was a business situation. Business is now taken care of.
It's a difference, what we were talking about last week, of keeping the lines of communication open versus the Raider strategy, which, from all indications, seemed to have been the opposite.
No question.
Yeah, I don't think there's a secret formula here. I mean, you know, we talk about getting these deals done, and it always comes down to just humility and basic understanding of, you know, what another person wants. And players have an extremely good understanding of the fact that the NFL is a business, and they've seen this day in and day out. And I think that anything that goes back the other way from a coach or a GM or a team president that says, hey, I know what you're looking for, we'll get it done. Just hang on, you know. And that goes such a long way towards team harmony. And look at the different position that the Raiders and the Rams are in right now. The Rams have paid all their homegrown superstars. There's a good vibe in this locker room. The Raiders have gutted everything, and I don't think that there's any young player on that roster that expects to be getting paid anytime
soon.
Yeah,
and I think it's there's also the type of guy it is. And I think everybody, like, when you pay a guy at that level, I think there's, like, this implicit thing. It's like, this is what we stand for, right? Like, because, I mean, you guys have been in those locker rooms. The hierarchy does work by salary in those places. Like, and the younger guys are looking at the guys who are getting paid. And I think to some degree it's, like, whoever you pay, like, the rest of the locker room is going to look at that and say that that's what this place stands for. Like, so, like, if I want to get there, like, that's the kind of guy I've got to be. And in the cases of both Mack and Donald, like, those guys are A-plus people as far as A-plus people on top of being A-plus players. And so I think for the Raiders, part of it is going to be part of the fallout here is dealing with it and saying, you know, like, another young player might be like, wait a second, you're messing with that guy? Like, that was the guy that you were hardlined? That's the guy that you were giving all that crap to? That's the guy who had to go through all of that? And the Rams are and I think Rams players can now look at it, where maybe they had those questions a couple weeks ago, and now they're saying, okay, like, you took care of business with that guy over there because he's the type of player you're comfortable putting out in front.
And that's what you were saying before about the different messages, right? So the Bears, their messages, we're going to get Mac because we feel like we can be good this year, and this kind of gives us an extra boost. The Rams are saying we cannot go into the season without Aaron Donald and without him happy because we feel like we can contend. And then if you're a Raiders player, they're saying, like, your head coach doesn't believe in your roster and doesn't think you're ready to win games. So it's sort of a, like, imagine being in that locker room and feeling like that's the message that's being sent.
I mean, it's hard. It's definitely hard. I mean, you know, like Buffalo's dealing with that. Buffalo, like they had to, they went through this purge where it's like they're carrying all this dead money on their cap, and they knew that they were going to have to go through this, and now they battle that. The Raiders are battling it too, where, I mean, Gruden's standing up there and saying, like, the roster needs a lot of work, and we've screwed up draft picks, and, like, forget even what that means for Reggie. Obviously, like, that was a, I don't even know if it's an indirect shot. It's sort of a direct shot.
For sure.
Yeah, right? Like, it's also saying to the locker room, like, we still are a ways to go. We still have a ways to go from a talent perspective.
I know we're over this, but can you just imagine sitting in there and, like, Gruden on his quarterback camp 2 years ago said, I'm amazed that people aren't talking about Christian Hackenberg in the first round. And you're saying that this is the man telling us that we don't know how to draft and that he's going to take control over the next 10 years of the franchise. It's just absolutely terrifying.
Yeah. The thing with Gruden, I don't think there's any question he can coach. Like, and I think we're going to see that. Like, I think the guy can legitimately coach. I think a lot of people forget that he was, 20 years ago, he was McVay. 20 years ago, like he is. Very, very, like, there were a ton of similarities beyond just the personality, and we've heard those comparisons, but, like, this was the young, forward-thinking offensive guru. Like, he was 20 years ago who Sean McVay is now. I don't think he's lost that. I think it'd be foolish to think that he's lost that. But the personnel, like this is where some coaches from that era wound up getting themselves in trouble, was they started to accumulate power because they were really successful on the field, and then the personnel side kind of went sideways. And so that part of it, the evaluation part of it, Connor, that you're mentioning, certainly an important piece to watch. All right, Jenny, you excited for football season?
Yes.
Connor.
Clearly.
Okay, so football makes its long-anticipated return to living rooms all across America this week. That means bragging rights and huge cash prizes are up for grabs at DraftKings.com, the leader in one-week fantasy sports. With one-week fantasy at DraftKings, you choose when to play. Draft a new team every week with no season-long commitments. At DraftKings, you are the GM. Just choose your players, stay under the salary cap, and see how your team stacks up against the competition. No matter what your skill level is, there's a contest waiting for you at DraftKings. So if you've been thinking about trying one-week fantasy football, now is the time to play. Because nothing makes Football Sunday more exciting than when you have a DraftKings lineup on the line. To celebrate week one, DraftKings is hosting a free team pick'em promo this weekend. That's right, it's this weekend. Download the app or go to DraftKings.com now and use the code Breer. That's my last name, B-R-E-E-R. All you have to do is pick at least half of the winning teams correctly, and you'll win a share of $1 million. That's right, $1 million. That's the code. It's Breer, B-R-E-E-R, only at DraftKings, the game inside the game. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/pick'em for details. Okay, Connor, news item number two.
On Monday, Nike rolled out the beginning of a campaign marking the 30th anniversary of the slogan, Just Do It. The face of that campaign, Colin Kaepernick, underneath the tagline, Believe in something, even if it means sacrificing everything. And I think this probably would have been thoughtful last year and more organic and maybe more helpful last year. Right now, it sort of feels steeped in capitalism and sort of opportunistic of Nike to, you know, this isn't, in my mind, a deal that's being done without serious market research. They don't need the people who were protesting Colin Kaepernick or not burning his jerseys. They don't need those guys anyway. They're exploiting a new market, or, you know, what they believe is an emerging market, or the people who they think already buy their clothes. And so, but hey, there you go. Colin Kaepernick, face of the ad campaign.
It's interesting because there's obviously a business component to it, and they're making a sort of opposite business decision as the NFL has made, right? So they're saying we are going to make a face of our ad campaign someone who has, you know, demonstrated for social justice, and the name of that, we're going to put that out front, whereas the NFL has, you know, with the anthem policy that's now suspended, but they've tried to sort of hide that and not put that out front. And so, you know, when you talk about these things, the question is, you know, talking to certain people who, you know, players around the league, I talked to a sports economics professor, and a few of them have said, maybe the NFL is guessing wrong, right? If you make an anthem policy and you go this direction, you're saying that, you know, we believe that we have enough fans that do not support players kneeling, do not support these social justice platforms, that it's worth it to make this decision. But Chris Long, and you know, in the Eagles locker room a few weeks ago, we were talking about it, and he said, well, what if the NFL is guessing wrong? Because there's this whole base of fans that do support the players taking a stand and using their platform and the work they've been doing in the communities mm-hmm. as a result of it that we've seen, especially over the last year or two. And so they're making two very different mm-hmm. decisions here. And I guess the question is the Nike consumer base that different from the NFL one?
So I think we can kind of, you know, relate this to the way the media works now. It used to be 20, 25 years ago that the most profitable thing was to stand in the middle, was to give people the news, because there were mainly only three news networks then, right? NBC, CBS, ABC, to give people the news and just let them decide. Like, we tell you what the news is, you don't tell us what the news is. Now what sells? What sells is being on one side or the other. And so what you're seeing now, like on cable TV, you see news networks that are clearly taking a side. And they're not doing that for no reason. They're doing that because that sells. They're doing that because people like to create their own echo chambers. And they like to surround themselves with like-minded people. They can build a social media feed that's full of people that agree with them. They can only watch a certain news network and get news their way. Like all of that, right? So I think what the NFL has tried to do is the NFL has tried to stand in the middle. And the NFL has tried its best to appease everybody. And I think what they've learned is that in 2018, you do that and you wind up pleasing no one, because there's going to be room for both sides to get pissed off.
I think this is
I think in this case, Nike is going the way of the way a lot of media companies are going in 2018, which is like we have to take a side. And like, to me, that's sort of sad in a way, but I do feel like that's what it is. It's like this need to take a side. And so I think Nike is basically responding to the way the public's responded in 2018, which is there's a need to take a side on things.
I think so, and I agree that it's definitely gone that way. But, you know, I think to Jenny's point, you know, they are taking a side, but aren't there times in life, in history, where, you know, regardless of where the wind is blowing, like, everybody's got to take a side on something? And I think that this is one of these watershed moments in
history. Nike could stay out of it.
Yeah. I mean, they could have
just stayed out of it, right?
But they're playing this game 10, 20, 30 years down the road where, you know, maybe, you know, what was the apparel company maybe that would have stood behind Muhammad Ali at that point in his career, or, you know, anybody that took used sports as a platform to discuss these things. And I think that that's at least forward thinking in their mind. But I think that this is a time where everybody's got to take a side. And I think the NFL is slowly realizing that.
I just don't know. Like, so the league, and look, it was very clear with their anthem policy. Like, they understand that, and a lot of this is split up by parts of the country, by people like what area of the country do you live in, and like sometimes that can tell you something about people and their belief system and the way they think. And the NFL was, that's how the NFL tried to middle this whole thing, was they tried to middle the whole thing by saying, okay, we're putting something on the books that's enforceable, so if the shit hits the fan in September, then we're going to have something enforceable on the books, but we're going to let you guys all do your own thing. And so, like, that was their way of middling the decision, was like, well, if you're in Philadelphia, or you're in New York, or you're in New England, or you're in San Francisco, and we talked about this a couple weeks ago, like, this is an intensely local thing, so you guys feel free to do what you want. And they don't need – there's no need for them to anger their players. Fine, do what you want. Like, if you're in Dallas or Houston or New Orleans, like, there are real problems there if you do that. And so – like, again, like, trying to middle the decision, trying to middle things is where the NFL's problem's been. And I think what's really interesting about this is that there's a swoosh on every jersey. Like, there is a swoosh, like, there will be a swoosh on every player this weekend. Like, I still don't know. I want to know if Nike reached out to the league. I would think they would have. I can't imagine the reaction at the league office if they didn't. But I think that's an interesting element to it. And because it, remember, your feelings aside, this the guy is suing the league. Like your feelings on what he's doing aside, like he is suing the NFL. And so I think that part of it too is really interesting because it's like now how does the league react? Because like they're looking at this and they're saying, okay, well, you know, that's our like our primary apparel sponsor, our primary apparel partner is now like running a campaign with a guy who's suing us. Like that's like the larger piece of this that I think is really, really interesting.
Yeah, I mean, Nike's doing what a lot of players around the league wish the NFL were doing is saying that like we believe that this part of our fan base is significant. Like we're speaking to this part of our fan base that supports the demonstrations and supports the social justice platform. So Nike is speaking to those people, and there are tons of players who wish that the NFL would say, you know what, we're going with this and we're all in, and you know, we believe that there's a you know, that this side is the not only the right side to go with, but also that it's a significant base, and that, you know, you might lose fans another side, but right, we're picking this
side.
Well,
it's all about business for them. Like that's like this is about business for the NFL. And this is about what they think will make the money, what they think will lose the money. Like people act like I laugh when I hear people say that like this is like ideological for Jerry Jones. It's not ideological unless you consider, you know, economic decisions ideological. Like he is worried about what's happening to him at home, you know, and like this isn't like those guys didn't become billionaires by making ideological decisions. Those guys became billionaires by making financial decisions, and I think that's what all of this boils down to for them. And I think they've made mistakes in that regard too here. Like I think they have made some mistakes in that regard here. The biggest problem, of course, is exactly what you're referencing, which is that there's no trust between the players and the owners anymore. And that's a lot of people's fault. That's the league's fault. That's the owner's fault. That's the union's fault. That's everybody's fault. Like and they can't come to a part where, because believe me, like the NBA and their players have, they have their fights behind closed doors, but they're still able to kind of contain those. And they're still like, they treat the players like partners. And so there's a belief that like, hey, we're all in this together. And so the owners can go to the players and say, look, like, this is what's best for business. And the players can be like, okay, like, let's do this. The NFL can't do that with the players because the trust doesn't exist there. And I think we're going way off into left field on this from what we were originally talking about. But, I mean, I think the trust piece of it's really, really important. Okay, Jenny, news item number 3.
5 quarterbacks went in the first round in April, and just one of those 5, Jets quarterback Sam Darnold, is slated to start week 1. So I think the other option that seemed the most likely was Josh Allen, but the Bills decided to go with Peterman, mm-hmm. who looked good in the preseason. He will, of course, be facing the Chargers defense that embarrassed him last year in week 2.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think the other issue is that question I think we talked about a little bit last week, but walking that fine line of when it helps a quarterback mm-hmm. to start early and when it actually hurts them. And I think looking at the Bills' offensive line situation, you know, 3 starters from last year's unit gone, yeah. I think Allen is in a position where it could hurt him.
Now, Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean can't say that, right? Like, they can't come out and say, our offensive line blows, that's why Allen's not playing. But, I mean, look, they traded away Cordy Glenn, and he wasn't playing last year, so that's not as big a hit. But they didn't expect to lose Eric Wood. He had the neck injury. They didn't expect to lose Richie Incognito for the reasons that they lost him. So you're talking about, like, 3 out of 5 starting offensive linemen going into last year and now gone. Like, especially when you're talking about a guy who has to learn, who's a little raw, like Allen, it makes sense to sit him. I just think Darnold's different than the other guys. Like, I think Darnold is uniquely qualified to play as a rookie for 2 reasons. One, you know, and I think we talked about this last week, but you can see, number 1, he can take hits. And that was absolutely apparent last year at USC. He was playing behind a young offensive line. The other thing is he can compartmentalize mistakes, and he showed that too. Like, now that's a problem that he was making those mistakes last year, but at the very least we saw like he was able to compartmentalize those and bounce back from them, and he's able to put things behind him. And like, they got off to a rough start last year. Well, you know, what did they do? They turned around and they won the conference. So I think Sam Darnold is wired a little bit differently and built a little bit differently physically like that puts it just puts him, I think, in this unique position to play where maybe the others don't have the same combination of that.
I also think plain and simply just gets rid of the ball faster. Yeah. You know, he just has that internal timer, which, you know, like if you watch Baker Mayfield in the preseason, still tried to turn a lot of things into something bigger, was still in that sort of 3 second range, whereas Darnold is just a lot faster. It's a decision and it's out. And Josh Allen, same thing, where, you know, I think especially in that Bengals preseason game, started to get the shakes a little bit, started to get a little bit nervous, and that's a huge indicator.
Almost like he was looking at the rush.
If you're McDermott, that we got to pull this guy out of here or we're going to risk blowing the next 5 years on this pick.
Right. Yeah. It's not necessarily that things are always perfect around you, but it's a big factor in which quarterbacks play early is how you react when things are imperfect and messy around you. And Darnold seems to be the best at handling that.
And I think like you look at like Jared Goff's a good example. He got the crap knocked out of him. I think Rams people would tell you that it was a mistake to play him as a rookie when they played him.
And they waited, what, seven or
eight
games?
They waited almost 2 months. And I think part of it at that point is job preservation, right? Like, it's like, well, if I can get the rookie in there and then he looks pretty good, they won't pull the plug on me. You know what I mean? Like, that can play into it. And that's why I think a lot, like any of these teams, their season goes down the tubes. Like, you get to week 10 and the team's 3-7, like, it's a lot. It's going to be hard for those teams not to put the kids in there, but there's no question that you have to balance that, like that piece of it. That if it's not what's good for him, like if this guy's going to be our guy for the next 15 years, it just don't put him out there.
Right, and I think that's particularly going to be relevant in Cleveland. Right, I mean, I think they have a pretty tough start to the schedule, and talk about job preservation. I mean, that's a big concern for Hugh Jackson. So if Tyrod Taylor's not winning games, you know, does that accelerate the process to getting Mayfield in there?
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see if it's up to him at that point too.
Right.
Because I think part of it is, you know, in a situation like that, when you've got a first-year general manager, like who's going to be making that decision if the season's going down, if the season's circling the drain, and like, you know, now it's like, do we put our young number one overall pick in there? Like, I would think at that point, like, it's like, you know, that's probably a lot more of a group decision than it is a coach's decision at that point.
Interim coach Todd Haley.
Okay, news item number four. I want to couch this by saying it's Tuesday. What time we got, Connor? 12:45, I think, right? This is going to post overnight on Wednesday. So if this changes, fine. Just understand that we're taping it in the middle of the day on Tuesday. If Le'Veon Bell does show up, then the context of this changed a little bit. But I do think there's a bigger thing at work here. So as of this taping, Le'Veon Bell has yet to report to the Steelers. On Monday, GM Kevin Colbert released a statement. "We are disappointed Le'Veon Bell has not signed his franchise tender and rejoined his teammates. Coach Tomlin and the coaching staff will continue to focus on preparing the players on our roster for a regular season opener Sunday against the Browns." After that, on Tuesday, right around lunchtime, Tomlin had a press conference, and he said that he hasn't talked to Bell. And I'll just tell you guys, I think that there is an element of knife twisting here going on with Le'Veon Bell. I'll believe that he's willing to give up almost $1 million by missing Sunday's game when I see it. I don't know if that would be the most intelligent business decision to make, but I do think that there's an element of, all right, like 2 years, you put me through the grinder. And we fought through a tough contract negotiation, and I'm still here on a one-year deal. So you know what? I'm going to make you feel it a little bit too. I'm going to make you feel this a little bit. And like, big picture, now I picked the Steelers to go to the Super Bowl. Big picture, like, does this affect them? Like, big picture, is this something that lingers from week to week? Big picture is like the hard feelings between the team and the player. Is there a consequence there that could affect their season, especially when this was a team with a lot of noise around it at the end of last year, too.
Right. And you sort of understand the Steelers' stance. I mean, we're talking about Mac, about projecting a few years down the line what kind of player they will be. And so you can sort of understand, for the money that Bell wanted, you know, with his dual duties as both a running back and receiver and the heavy workload that he takes, you can understand why the Steelers weren't willing to commit to that money for the long term. But yeah, at the other, and that becomes a, you know, sort of a weekly distraction, and you have, you know, Bell's statement when they did not, you know, reach a contract extension before the franchise tag deadline, you know, basically indicating he wouldn't be a Steeler beyond this year. And so that just puts extra pressure on the situation. It seems like both sides are sort of just bracing and heading for a split. And when you go into a season like that, that's an interesting dynamic.
How unbelievable to me is Kevin Colbert, like the general manager of the Steelers? You see a lot of people around the league talk about maximizing windows and saying that we need to, you know, what the Giants are doing, for example, mm-hmm. with their quarterback. And there seems to be no hurry to pacify Le'Veon Bell in order to get the best remaining years out of Antonio. Antonio Brown's 30. Ben Roethlisberger's up there 36. And has been talking about retiring each of the last three yep. years. And there seems to be no sense of urgency there. And if it ends up that he gets Le'Veon Bell to play on this final franchise tag, that is the ultimate, you know,
this is the way
that
they've always operated, though. I mean, you can go back, and I remember there was the revolving door of outside linebackers there, and they would let guys walk, and everybody would be like, what the hell are they doing? And there'd always be someone behind them. And, you know, I think that this is part of, like, the ethos of that whole place, is that everybody is replaceable, and we'll find someone to do the job if you're not going to be here. Like, that's just in almost like a Patriots sort of way, and you don't hear them talked about that way. And they have rewarded some guys in the past, but, you know, like, there's always been this sort of, like, the Steelers are the Steelers, and the Steelers are going to be here before any of us who are here. We're the Steelers before any of us who are here got here, and we'll be the Steelers after any of us leave. And so don't think that you're above that. And I think that that's sort of, like, I was surprised with Colbert's statement the other day, because I didn't think it was necessary. I thought, to me at least, if I'm Bell, that sort of felt like tweaking a little bit. And you hear the way Tomlin's talking today, and it feels like tweaking a little bit more. And so that's why, like, I sort of, like, wonder if there's, like, going to be this sort of knife twisting that goes on over the course of the whole year and how it could affect the team.
Right. And then, but to your point earlier, oh, go ahead.
No, and I think the Steelers are banking on the fact that he's got so much to play for. Like, he's playing for a contract, right?
Right.
Like, he's playing for his last bite of the financial apple, because running backs, like, he's, whatever his next contract is probably going to be it as far as big money for him. And so I think the Steelers are banking on, like, once he gets in here, we don't need to worry about it, because if he doesn't play well, then that's only going to affect him.
Right. Other than avoiding injury, which is, you know, a factor, but he loses a lot of money if he keeps pushing this. You know, if he pushes it to the deadline, it would be losing about $8 million. And as you said, you know, in the summer, he said, I'm going to have the best season in 18, and that's to get the contract that he wants.
If I'm the Steelers social media team, I'm directed this week to release, like, a James Conner highlight video on Instagram. You know, that's the final stage of the tweaking.
That would be fantastic. That would be fantastic. All right. Well, you guys use NFL Game Pass, right?
Yes.
I've tried to use it to keep track of all the top quarterbacks, all the top rookie quarterbacks over the course of the preseason. It's a great way to watch all of that. It's a great way to look back at games. It's only with NFL Game Pass that you can replay every game all season. It's NFL football anytime on your time. There were a ton of standout performances over the course of the preseason. We got to watch Sam Darnold win the job with the Jets. We saw Baker Mayfield's ups and downs. We saw Josh Allen early on look like he had a real shot, and then it all kind of came apart against Cincinnati. With NFL Game Pass, you can replay them all from every angle. There's the broadcast version, commercial-free. There's the coaches film, which shows the all-22 angle the pros and coaches use. And then there's the condensed games version that lets you watch any game in about 45 minutes. Remember, with NFL Game Pass, it's game time, anytime. Best of all, you can kick off the 2018 season with a 7-day free trial of NFL Game Pass. Sign up now at NFL.com/MMQB10things. Game on. Connor, news item number 5.
Eagles coach Doug Peterson announced on Monday that Nick Foles, not Carson Wentz, will start the season opener against the Eagles. And Doug Peterson just looks like a man.
Eagles. That's
Ron Burgundy.
That's Ron Burgundy.
I will read anything you put in front of me.
Right. Against the Falcons. That's my bag, because I wrote out the headlines. But that doesn't exempt you.
And also auto-corrected Wentz to Went. So
right,
there are a few typos in there.
He did get past that one.
That's why I flunked out of broadcast school. But yeah, poor Doug Peterson just looks like a man at the end of his rope. And God bless the intrepid reporters in Philadelphia who have asked him 600,000 different ways. And to their point, this is what they should be doing. But, you know, Doug Peterson just seems so run down by this that I think that after a frustrating, what he called it, sort of a misunderstanding between him and the media, they finally announced that Nick Foles was going to start, which I think we all sort of saw coming. Yeah. I don't think you can start your quarterback who tore his ACL in December at the first week of the season.
I think that the reaction of Peterson was interesting, and I think part of that, I think the anger that coming out there in that setting, and this is to Doug's credit, because I think this is Doug's strength. And you remember when they fired Chip and they brought in Doug, one of the things that Jeffrey Lurie said was, Doug's got tremendous emotional intelligence. He's got a tremendous ability to reach players, to understand players, to relate with players. I think Doug's anger the other day was his managing his quarterback's ego. Carson is incredibly type A. Carson is the type of guy who is you better give me every chance to start. You better leave that door open. I'm going to get there. And I think a part of this was just managing who his quarterback is. And so I think the reason he came out so angry about it was they hadn't gone through the process. They hadn't gone through the full process of it yet. And he'd probably told Carson, I think we're starting Nick. I think that's the way we're going to go. But I'm not going to close the door on you until I have to. And so I think that was a piece of it. And this is almost to Doug's. This is to Doug's credit that he is able to read his players that way, understand his players that way. And I think that 100% of that, 100% of that anger was speaking through the media and to Carson Wentz saying, "I have your back."
I found a pinch of irony in Lane Johnson in the locker room saying that he was not allowed to reveal who the starting quarterback was, considering his comments last year about how the Patriots are robots and they only say what they were supposed to say in the media. So a little pinch of irony.
Lane had an interesting offseason.
And I guess the one thing I would say about Wentz is it wasn't just the ACL, right? It was the LCL, mm-hmm. which, you know, it's fine. It'll heal in time. But I do think that extends the healing process a little bit. And I think that's sort of why, you know, pushing the 9-month threshold, which this opener is slightly under 9 months. But I do think with the extra ligament damage, I think that can extend the recovery a little bit. And I think perhaps that's why, you know, as much as he wanted to be back for this game, I think that, you know, I think that changes the recovery process. It sort of changes what happens right after surgery. And I think it can extend it a little bit.
It's interesting to me, like you said, you mentioned Carson Wentz's personality, but at what point can't he understand all the factors at play here? I mean, it's not like the backup quarterback is Davis Webb. This is a guy who won the Super Bowl for the Eagles last year.
Yeah.
It makes the most sense. And, you know, I'm just surprised that it became the bigger deal that it became.
You know what, though, Connor? I think part of it is human nature, right? It was probably sort of painful for Wentz to watch the Super Bowl, right? It was probably pretty painful for him to sit out there and watch, see, my team is winning without me.
If this podcast won an Emmy without me,
he'll never
live it.
But he'll never get that back, right? So I'm sure that just on a human nature level, that was probably really freaking difficult. And now the team's rolling back out there. His team. Right, is rolling back out there, and they're going to drop the banner, and they're going to have the Lombardi there, and they're having this big party to celebrate the 2017 season. And he was an MVP candidate for 80% of that season, right? And now he's going to be on the sidelines again. And I think it's almost for Wentz, getting back to week one was probably almost I don't want to have to relive this again. I don't want to have to go through this again. And it's probably, I'm sure it was part of there's phony motivation left and right for all of these guys, right? I think it was probably some kind of built-up motivation for him. This is my team.
Yeah. That's what I wanted to read in Doug Peterson's book. Come on, dude. Dish on that. The madness.
Yeah.
Because I think Wentz said coming out of the tunnel last year was the hardest part for him every week. I remember him saying that. And so, yeah, now he's coming out the tunnel. It's the big party for the Super Bowl champs. It's the opener of the season. And you're again having that feeling of, I can't be a part of it.
Right. I mean, and again, this is a credit to Doug. I think managing that, I think is a piece of why he was upset last week. And I was in his office 2 weeks ago, and you know, one of the things he said to me was just like, I'm attached to this guy. Like, this is the first player that I drafted as a head coach. He plays the most important position. It's the position that, like, is my specialty. Like, if everything goes right, we're going to be tied together for 15 years. Like, why would I be all worked up about a single game or two games? Like, why would I? And that makes total sense. If you just consider it from that standpoint, you know, so Doug's looking at it from that standpoint. Carson's looking at it from like the way a 25-year-old looks at it. Like, I don't want to have to live through that again. I don't want to have to see it. Like, I want to take the next step. I want to put like my injury behind, and like, it's just there. I think there's probably an element there of having to relive all of that.
Another reason these millennials are killing the NFL, right?
Millennials are killing the world, not the NFL, the
Applebee's,
world.
Applebee's, everything.
The world. All right. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
All right, we'll jump right into the six-pack. You guys know how this works. I put the call out for questions on Twitter on Tuesday. You guys ask. I pick six. If I pick yours, you get a like on Twitter. That means I hit the little heart there underneath your tweet, and I answer your question here. Question number one for the week. This is from DOT. That's at C. Dotson Owner. Big Ben thinks Cleveland's D could be the toughest he faces all year. How do you think it will be, and could that be enough to upset the Steelers in week one? I think the Browns upsetting the Steelers is on the board, and I picked the Steelers to get to the Super Bowl. The Steelers are dealing with a lot of stuff this week. Obviously, the Le'Veon Bell thing is out there, and so just having to manage that noise, a motivated Cleveland team coming in off of an 0-16 season, I don't think it's impossible that you see something like that, that you see the Browns go in there and upset them. As for how good the defense is going to be, I think it's got a chance to be pretty good. They can't afford a lot of injuries, but Denzel Ward looks like he's going to be a number one corner. They feel very good about their depth at linebacker, even without Michael Kendricks. They have Jamie Collins. They have Joe Schobert. They have Christian Kirksey. They have Jannard Avery, the young rookie, out of, fifth round pick out of Memphis, who's turned heads in training camp all the way going back to the spring. And up front, and this is the key, up front, I think they're going to be really good. You have a good interior defensive lineman in Larry Ogunjobi. You've got a good second pass rusher in Emmanuel Ogba. And I think that we're going to see a big year out of Myles Garrett. Just look at year two for Khalil Mack. Look at year two for Von Miller. Those guys exploded. Von Miller had 18.5 sacks his second year. Khalil Mack, I believe, had 15 sacks his second year. Myles Garrett could be in for a similar jump. And if he does become that type of player, it changes everything for them defensively. Okay, question number two from Alex Dale. That's at NFL Nerd UK. Sammy Watkins or Odell Beckham for the greatest earnings over the next 6 years. Watkins will have another free agency. I actually think it might be Sammy Watkins. Here's why. Over the next 3 years, Sammy's going to make $48 million. Odell will make $52 million. Okay, let's assume that they both make it there. They both make it there. Odell's playing out the rest of his contract, which averages out to $18 million a year. He's going to have 4 years left on that deal at that point. He'll have 3 years left on this deal at that point. Now look at where Sammy Watkins is going to be going into unrestricted free agency under the new collective bargaining agreement, having played for Andy Reid the 3 years prior. I actually think Sammy Watkins could come out of this as a bigger earner over the next 6 years than Odell Beckham. And it's not about who's going to be a better player. It's about where those players are. Sammy's in position to cash in again. So you hit the nail on the head there, Alex. Question number three from Chochos O'Reilly, XPE. That's at Chochos underscore O'Reilly. Which will be the most surprising division champion? I'm going to pull up my picks now so you guys have them. You can also see these out there on the mmqb.com. My division champions: New England, Houston, Pittsburgh, Chargers, Minnesota, New Orleans, Philadelphia, and the Rams. I think of that group, the most surprising division champion would be the Houston Texans. I think that Deshaun Watson is going to have a big second year. I know a lot of NFL people who think he's going to have a big second year. I did a quarterback poll over the course of the last week or so, put the question out to 32 different offensive coordinators, head coaches, general managers, quarterbacks coaches, and Deshaun Watson actually wound up getting a first-place vote. Who do you think the best quarterback's going to be at the end of the year? Deshaun Watson actually got one of those first-place votes. I think the defense is going to be really good. And so Houston would be my pick as the most surprising division champion. Question number four, this is from Steve Suffredin. That's at Steve Suff on air. How close are the Bears to playoff contention with Mac in town? And if they're still a little bit away, what should be the next move? I think they're right there. I think if they're in the AFC, they might be a playoff team. I think the fact that they're in the NFC hurts them, and that's why I didn't put them in the playoff field. I really like the core now. I mean, you look Charles Leno, Kyle Long, Cody Whitehair on the offensive line. I know Shaheen's hurt, but Adam Shaheen and Trey Burton at tight end, Allen Robinson, Taylor Gabriel, Cam Meredith at receiver. You draft Miller out of Memphis. The running backs, you got depth there with Tariq Cohen and Jordan Howard. And on defense, the defense has a chance to be really good. Akeem Hicks is an elite interior player. Khalil Mack, obviously, an elite edge player. If they can get Leonard Floyd healthy, that's a very, very valuable building block for them. I think Roquan Smith is going to be a stud. In the secondary, you've got Fuller, you've got Amos, you've got Jackson. I like the core there, and I didn't put them in the playoffs. And the reason why, because I think that the strength of the NFL is in the NFC. I think if you name the top 10 teams in the league right now, eight of them might be in the NFC. And so I don't think it's about making another move. I think it's about the environment the Bears are competing in, the tougher conference, and maybe the toughest division in the whole NFL. Question number five, this is from Ayatollah P. He's asking me, and that's at Mr. Florida, and he's asking me who the most surprising rookie wide receiver will be. Now, I'm going to give you guys the list, okay? DJ Moore, Calvin Ridley, they're off the board. They're first rounders. Cortland Sutton, he's a second rounder. I think he's the Broncos love what they've gotten from him. Would he be a surprise? He was the 40th pick. It's tough to say that. Dante Pettis, to me, I think will have a big year because he's got great head for the game. He's a good fit for what Kyle Shanahan wants to do. Again, he's the 44th pick, so I don't know if you consider that a surprise. You got Christian Kirk at 47. Anthony Miller, again, we just mentioned him from Memphis at number 51 to the Bears. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to give you guys a late second-round pick that I think is going to be really good. Based on where he is, the environment he's going into, not a lot of people are talking about him. James Washington from Oklahoma State. The Steelers have been masterful over the last 10 years at drafting receivers. And you can go right on down the list. Mike Wallace, Antonio Brown, Emmanuel Sanders, Juju Smith-Schuster. None of those guys were first-round picks. Martavius Bryant, none of those guys were first-round picks. They have a knack for drafting receivers. And so I think James Washington going into that environment, I think there's talent there. They've got a good track record of developing those guys. So to me, James Washington would be the one to watch. If you want to go further down the list, a couple guys that have turned heads at their training camps, Michael Gallup, third-round pick of the Cowboys, Traquan Smith, third-round pick of the Saints. So those would be two more to watch if you're out there looking for guys who are going to surprise as rookie wide receivers. Final question of the week from Dan Parker. That's at FineParker89. What are the odds that the Patriots extend Trey Flowers during the season? Any guess as to what the numbers would look like? He's not going to get Khalil Mack's deal, but he is going to be affected by Khalil Mack. I look at Trey Flowers a little bit like you might have looked at Olivier Vernon back when he was coming up at the end of his deal. A very good pass rusher who may have potential to do more, the right kind of guy, who I think will have value out there in the market. If I am Trey Flowers, don't sign anything. Do not sign anything. You're in a good spot right now. The market just changed. They're probably going to put something in front of you that is going to say, that's going to make you think, like, this is a lot of financial security, and I can mitigate injury risk. I can take care of it all now. This is going to be that thing there. What Khalil Mack has done for everybody, he's changed the market. What Aaron Donald's done for everybody, he's changed the market. So we don't know how close others are going to get to where those guys are at. But if you're DeMarcus Lawrence right now, if you're Ziggy Ansah right now, both those guys playing on franchise tags, Lawrence in Dallas and Ansah in Detroit, or you're Trey Flowers now, and you're looking at potentially being an unrestricted free agent after the 2018 season, look, I think you roll the dice, you take the injury risk, you go out there, you play the year out, and then you see what's out there for you after the year. All right, appreciate you guys coming out. As always, we want your feedback. I want to make this your show, so please get to me on Twitter at Albert Breer. You can get to me on Facebook at Albert R. Breer. You can get to me on Instagram, if that's what you do, at Albert underscore Breer. You can also get to us on iTunes. Leave us a review and a rating. 5 stars, 4 stars, whatever. But leave us a review there. Let us know what we can do better. We want to be your show. I want to incorporate things you guys are bringing to us. That's why we do the 6-pack. So just bring all of that, and we'll do our best to make the show evolve as you guys see it best over the course of the next few months. And always, always, always remember to listen to the MMQB 10 Things podcast, the MMQB Deep Dive podcast, the MMQB Gambling podcast, and one more time, this podcast, the MMQB podcast with Albert Breer. You can get us on Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Play, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your shows. Same time next week. We'll see you guys then.
Tip of the hat to Albert, another strong edition of MMQB. Did you know your favorite team has a daily podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network? Steelers fans, we have you covered with Locked On Steelers. Cowboys fans, it's Locked On Cowboys. And Chiefs fans, it's Locked On Chiefs. You get the picture. Search Locked On, your favorite team. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcasts Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.